I'm delighted to welcome back to the show Robert Eisenstein. He is a particle physicist. He's the former president of the Santa Fe Institute, and he is the director of the Santa Fe Alliance for Science, which has all sorts of new programs going on this year. Welcome back to the Radio Cafe.
It's a delight to be here, Mary Charlotte.
So, first of all, let's talk about what the Santa Fe Alliance for Science does.
Okay. So, first of all, it began a little bit more than 5 years ago, and it is, from the beginning, an organization of volunteer engineers, scientists, and mathematicians who live in the Santa Fe area, who very generously donate their time and energy to try and help students K-12, and actually K-14 now, because we're involved with the community college, improve their skills in math and science, to offer them a variety of careers as they move on to their life's work. And not only as scientists, but, you know, to have mathematics as a fundamental skill that you can rely on no matter what you decide to do. So at the moment, we have we've had, in the 5 years, well more than 120 volunteers in the program. Right now, we have about 80 who are active. And in a minute, I can tell you a little bit about what we're doing.
So it's quite an amazing place, Santa Fe, because there are so many potential volunteers, retired or active scientists who live in this area because of the national labs and so on.
That's right. Yeah, so one fact that many people don't know is that New Mexico, per capita, ranks third in the United States in its population of scientists, engineers, and mathematicians. Third. We lag only behind Maryland and Massachusetts, and interestingly enough, Washington, D.C., which is not a state,
right, ranks
number one.
Yes, well, that makes a certain amount of sense. And so here we are, and the students in the Santa Fe Public Schools have this wonderful advantage. Our school systems are not, if you start looking at the national statistics, very highly ranked, and you guys are trying to do something about that.
That's right. With a full partnership with the public schools since something like March of 2007, we've had a formal partnership with the Santa Fe Public Schools. I would say we get along extremely well. We've had very gracious and strong support from both superintendents that we've experienced during our short lifetime, and we have excellent relations with the math and science coordinator, Ellen Levy, and so it works extremely well, I would say.
So, and we'll talk about the new programs coming up, but mm-hmm. So far, what are the kind of things you do? I mean, here you are, particle physicist, show up, and there's a class of third graders.
Right. Okay, so that's a very good point. One of the things that we stress, and I can't stress it often enough, actually, is that just as you are alluding, we are content experts. We know science and math. We don't necessarily know much pedagogy. So pedagogy is extremely important when you're dealing with very young kids, and it's not going to work very well if a particle physicist walks into a third grade classroom without having given some serious thought and maybe even had some training or some lessons from somebody who actually knows how to interact well with a third grader in a teaching environment.
And part of it is just knowing where they are, both educationally and developmentally.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. I mean, I know how to add the numbers 10 and 13, but that doesn't mean I know how to teach a third grader the most effective way to add 10 and 13. So there are things that we have to learn too.
So what are some of the things that you personally and that your colleagues have learned about teaching elementary school kids?
Well, we don't do so much of that. But I'll come back to your question in just a minute. The three things that we do mostly are we do extensive tutoring and mentoring in the high schools. At Santa Fe High, we had a program at Capitol High, which ended last year for positive reasons, not negative ones. We've done a significant amount of mentoring at Monte Del Sol Charter School and a little bit at Capitol High School. So that's a big activity. Another thing we do is to help in the elementary schools with the science fair program, which has grown dramatically over the last 3 years, partly because, maybe even mostly because, the Alliance can provide so many judges to help kids find projects to begin with, and also then we serve as judges. Just to give you an example, last year we judged at 13 science fairs, and we looked at over 1,400 projects.
Wow!
So it's a big effort on everybody's part.
And science fair is a place where kids can really learn because they can get into things in a hands-on kind of way.
That's right, and kids, the schools do it well, and in most instances, the student has a very positive experience, which helps them to appreciate science and to like it. and maybe most important, to realize they can do it. And so it has a lot of positive feedback, as you and I were talking about a bit earlier. Let me say a little bit about interacting with elementary school children.
Yeah.
As I said earlier, it's not so easy to do. It takes a lot of skill. It takes a lot of patience. Most scientists are used to dealing with their peers, and that's why we do better with older students, because they're closer to our peer group. And as we move down into the elementary schools, for example, if we go to a classroom to give a discussion about, let's say, astronomy or anthropology or archaeology or some subject like that, all of which we've done, the person has to give some very careful thought to what knowledge level he's going to find, he or she is going to find, when they walk into the classroom. So it takes some real careful preparation.
So if you go give a talk about archaeology or about physics to young people, what have you found that they really get interested in? I mean, what are the things that pique their passions?
Well, if I were talking to them, for example, about astronomy, which is a subject I know a little bit more about, one of the things that attracts kids is when you can just talk about the enormous distances involved in discussing even our solar system, let alone what might be outside it. So you start talking to children about the fact that it takes light, which is the fastest thing in the universe, takes light 8 minutes to get from the sun to the earth. And that's about the closest distance you ever talk about in astronomy.
Right.
And if you talk about the amount of time it takes light to reach Pluto, that number's 10 hours.
Right.
And then if you go outside the solar system, you start talking about light years. And then you talk about the galaxy, this Milky Way, and you talk about it being 100,000 light years across. Then, you know, you can build, and you can, and pretty soon eyes are open and kids are thinking hard about what's going on. So,
and if you think about also how long it takes to bicycle 8 minutes, and then if you were to bicycle 10 hours at the same speed, that's how much longer it would take to reach Pluto.
Exactly.
Spatially.
Exactly. And that's exactly the kind of analogy you try to build with students. That's a perfect one.
Yeah.
Very good. The third and last thing that we are doing, the major thing that we do now, is something you know very much about because you've helped us a great deal, and that's the Santa Fe Science Cafe for Young Thinkers series, which has had, I think, 24 of them in the past 3.5 years or so.
Many of whom have been on this
Every
show, I'm delighted
one
to say.
Has been on your show, except for one that I can remember.
Wow.
You know
it's so much fun to have that chance for me and for our listeners to talk about science, and then for these young people who show up who get the added dimension of visual elements.
Right. We try very hard to do a very wide-ranging series. We don't focus just on physics or just on biology. We try to, or math. We try to cover a big variety. So we've had everything from Deborah Madison coming to talk to us about edible foods,
edible foods as opposed to non-edible foods.
Yeah. Well, I think her title of her talk was "Edible Food for a Healthy Lifestyle," if I remember correctly. It was something like that.
Right.
And she did a lovely job. I think we had 100 kids at that one. We had Tom Bowles, the governor's science advisor, come and talk about dark energy in the universe.
Right.
So that gives you an idea of
that's pretty much the range.
That's the range.
Dark
exactly.
energy to lettuce
right.
leaves.
Exactly. Yeah. And then Mert Byrne from El Dorado came and talked about what it's like to be a veterinarian.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the kids love that one.
Yeah.
So we've had some very, very good. Well, they've all been very good, I would say.
And it's called the Santa Fe Science Cafe for Young Thinkers. But I have to say that I haven't found a single one of them that isn't equally appropriate for and interesting for adults who might want to show up and just expand their knowledge and learn some new things and
right.
meet some new people.
I think that's a fair comment, yeah. The one that I would say was the most accessible to students was one given by my good friend George Rubottom when he talked about camouflage in the underwater realm.
Yes.
And he showed something like 120 slides that he personally has taken in his scuba diving adventures around the world, and he talked about camouflage and how undersea animals do that.
That's why you got to show up, because we can't do that on the radio.
Can't do that on the radio, and I'm telling you, the kids were completely interactive on that one. That was the one that I think set the standard in terms of interaction with the students. But, you know, parents could enjoy it too, so they're just as you say.
Yeah. So. And it also, I mean, when you do a program like that, you know, camouflage on the ocean floor, eventually that will get people thinking about coral reefs and climate change and pollution and all of those things, because then they develop a kind of bond with, even in a desert landlocked state like New Mexico, with the sea.
Absolutely. Which was, as you know, a sea at one time. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so it's... So the one that's coming up, we have a full series this year of three in the first semester and three in the second semester. And the first one will be on Wednesday, September 15th. So that's coming up pretty soon. It's being given by a good friend of mine, Chris Morris, from the Los Alamos National Lab. And he's going to talk about a subject called radiography. And it's basically how to look inside explosions, detect nuclear contraband, and to see through opaque objects. And he promises an interesting demonstration or two of how all of this works. So I'm very much looking forward to this.
That sounds like some kind of movie.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. We're talking to Robert Eisenstein about the Santa Fe Alliance for Science. So, okay, so we've had the Science Cafe for Young Thinkers and the tutoring program and science fairs and all these things that you've already been doing. But there's a couple of new things also, and one of them is called Math Blitz.
That's correct. So the Math Blitz... which, of course, is a mutual product of the Santa Fe Public Schools and the Alliance for Science, is born really out of two things. One is the fact that we as tutors in the high schools have noticed that many of the students we deal with are not as well prepared in math as they ought to be, and we feel that this is an impediment to learning in many fields, not just in math and science. And so we came to the school district with a suggestion that we start this Math Blitz, trying to help kids in middle school, or starting in the 7th and 8th grade, improve their skills in math. And the school district has backed this 1,000%. They've noticed the same issues, of course. That's what they do. And so together we're setting up a program, a pilot, for the fall, which will... continue into the spring, and hopefully we'll be successful, and then we'll continue after that. And the idea is that a math content expert, shall we say, will go into a classroom with a teacher, under the teacher's supervision all the time, for 1 hour per week, and talk to the kids about interesting things in math, and try to show them why math can be fun, why it can be interesting, why it can be useful to them, and like that.
Okay, so here we are on the radio. Tell us three interesting math things.
Okay. So you might say to a student, well, I understand you want to buy a car. And you can perhaps get your hands on $50 a week. How many weeks is it going to take you to buy a $2,000 car? Well, you can say that's not such a hard problem. We can all figure that out.
Right.
But some students can't figure that out.
Right.
And so... it's important for them to be able to figure things like that out. So teach them how to do it, and they can see right away why that would be important. So you don't have to do any motivation on that one. Another one might be, how many disposable diapers do you think are used in the United States in 1 year? And that's a good bit harder. So how would you go about figuring that out? Well, so first of all, you have to decide on how many diapers a child uses in a day. Then you have to decide on how many children of that age there are in the United States. Then you have to remember how many days in the year there are. And then you have to multiply those numbers together, and you get a huge number. By the way, it's about 10 billion.
Yeah, I read once somebody who had a cloth diaper service had a statistic on how many times you could go to the moon and back with disposable diapers if you strung them end to end.
Yeah.
It's a lot of times.
A more immediate concern is to, if you wanted to really take the kids down to a complicated subject, how much of a landfill does it take to deal with disposable diapers? That's
right.
Not a trivial issue at all.
Right. And how much can you compact them?
Right.
Yeah, so these are all very interesting. So
yeah.
When you present these problems to, let's say, 7th graders, do you see that spark of interest in their eyes?
Well, we haven't done it yet.
So
I don't know yet, but that's exactly what we're looking for.
Well, we expect a full report.
Okay. And let me just add this. It's not as easy as all of us just walking into a classroom. This has to be fairly carefully choreographed. It has to mix well with the existing curriculum, because that's very well defined. It has to be coordinated across all the schools so that every student, every classroom rather, is getting the same exposure each week to the same subject matter. So there are logistical issues which are not so simple but have to be figured out.
Now, you're also doing another program, and that is for teachers. It's a professional enrichment program for high school teachers.
It's a professional enrichment program for middle and high school science teachers.
Middle and high school science teachers.
Right. And the idea there is to, in a way, extend the idea of the Science Cafe for Young Thinkers to the teaching ranks. So what we will do is to poll the teachers in middle and high school and ask them what subjects they would like to hear about. And we will set up folks to come to Saturday morning sessions. Teachers will be compensated to do that. So this will not, they will not be asked to do this of their own free time. This will be considered an official Santa Fe Public School function, so they will receive a salary or a payment. And in the end, they will also hopefully receive professional development credits toward their whatever teaching licensure they happen to be pursuing at that time. We expect to offer six of those in the coming year, and the average attendance we expect will be somewhere between 20 and 25. It'll take a Saturday morning, so an expert, content expert, will come and talk to them in a highly interactive way, answer questions, help them build lesson plans that they can take to the classroom, things of that kind.
And what kind of subjects will they be covering?
Astronomy is a good example. Environmental issues, there are a million of those you can think of. Issues involving global warming, issues involving human disease. You could imagine discussions of anthropology, of archaeology. We really want the teachers to help us design this. We don't want to be in a position of just handing them something or telling them what we're going to do. We'd want their full participation in figuring out how to do this the most effect, best effect.
Now, when you were saying a little while ago that students in this town are entering high school ill-prepared for math, mm-hmm. what's going on with elementary and middle school math teaching? I mean, why are they not getting prepared at those when they should be?
Well, I think there's, in my own personal opinion, and I have to preface it by saying that I've never been an elementary school teacher and certainly haven't been one here in Santa Fe, but what I'm told is that there's not enough exposure to math in the classroom as the week goes on. I think it's true that kids don't get a lot of reinforcement about math when they go home at night. So homework is an issue. Then there's a popular social perception that math isn't cool and one doesn't do it and it's not useful for anything. And it's, of course, it is difficult for some kids, for many kids. And the hard thing is to persuade kids that, yes, they really can do this if they're willing to put the time into it. One of the things I like to say to people is, you know exactly what to do if you want to be a good piano player. You have to practice a lot. If you want to learn to shoot baskets, foul shots, you have to stand 2 hours a day on the foul line and do that till you're tired. If you want to get good at math, you have to practice. I don't say you have to do it 2 hours a day, but you do have to practice. If you don't practice, you forget. Becomes frustrating, and one thing leads to another.
And there's so much of that, what would you say, confidence building. When you start to realize that you can do something, then you get confident enough to do it again the next time and so on. And when a couple of those links are missed, people feel like they're getting so far behind, they'll never be able to do anything, particularly with math, because it always builds on the thing that came before.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's exactly what we see. In fact, I think one of the reasons that the district is so enthusiastic about the Blitz is that they've seen a parallel thing take place in the science fairs. Science fairs were a much smaller operation 3 or 4 years ago than they are now. And one of the things that's come out of this is you see kids building confidence that they can go and they can do science. They can figure out a question. They can answer it with a scientific method. They can measure data. They can make a conclusion. I mean, that's a very positive thing. And it doesn't take much of a success to build that confidence.
Exactly.
And it's very interesting that now when you talk to modern pedagogy, particularly in science, is a lot about problem solving and what's called discovery-based learning. You hear those phrases a lot. And so you have to think, well, what happens if a student sits down and tries to answer, let's say, a word problem or a problem that requires inductive reasoning as you move along?
Well, a word problem being there is a water tank with 7 tubes coming in and 4 tubes coming out of different diameters.
Right. Yeah,
Those things drove me nuts.
I know, and that's a hard one. So you can imagine a student sitting down, and the first part is not so hard, but they lack the math skills to do even the first part. So then they immediately can go, wait a minute, I can't do this. And so their lack of mathematical skill or mathematical practice impedes them right from the beginning. So it has an effect way beyond whatever it does in terms of their learning math itself.
We're talking to Robert Eisenstein from the Santa Fe Alliance for Science. Lots of kids play, probably terrifying numbers of kids at this point, play video games. Are there any video games that are actually fun that involve learning math or science skills? Is that part of their learning?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I don't know very much about that particular subject. But if you wanted an excellent interview on your program, a person I would recommend you speak to is Irene Lee,
We had her on one time before.
Did you? So she runs a program called called Project GUTS, and GUTS stands for Growing Up Thinking Scientifically. And the thinking scientifically that she and her colleagues lead them through is all about studying complex systems through a computer games kind of point of view. So the student is able to build a small problem inside of a simple programming language and watch how it evolves. And it's a lot like a game, and it very much builds on the kid's attraction to those kinds of activities. I think that's a big part of what she tries to do. But you should ask her.
Yeah. Well, to be continued. What are some of the more interesting science fair projects that you've seen young people do here in New Mexico?
Oh, we've seen quite a few. It's quite remarkable what kids do when they put their minds to it. We try to stress to the schools that this should be not a demonstration, but an actual answering a science question. So at the beginning, you'd see, at every science fair, you'd see quite a few volcanoes. You'd go in, and so the kid would have built some sort of conical thing.
A paper-mâché volcano,
and they put baking soda and vinegar in it, and it explodes and does
right.
Well, I mean, that's well and good, and I don't mean to be overly dismissive, but that's not what we mean by a science fair project.
Right.
A science fair project means let's ask a question.
That's like more like an art project.
That's more like an art project, yeah. So a good you see a lot of times you'll see kids studying plant growth. Take the same tomato plants, let's say, and feed each one of them a different kind of fertilizer or no fertilizer, expose them to differing amounts of light. You can do that extremely well. You see very conclusive results. Some kids say, well, do you think a tomato plant would grow better listening to Bach or listening to the Beatles?
Do they do that?
They do that.
And?
So far as I know, there's been no conclusive result from that one. But, you know, that's a very reasonable science question.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, there are people who, do you remember the whole talking to your plants thing?
Yes.
I knew somebody, it wasn't a science fair project, but she just did a little experiment on her own. She had 3 identical plants, or virtually identical plants. She talked to one with great love, she talked to another one with great hatred,
mm-hmm.
and the third one she ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones she loved and hated thrived, and the ones she ignored died. But that's something you have to really do it scientifically,
right,
to see if that...
That's right. And so one of the big lessons, if I had judged that project, I would have said to the student, well, did you repeat your experiment?
Exactly.
Did it work the same way the second time? If it did, well, that's a powerful confirmation. If it didn't, what do you conclude? Well, you conclude you have to do it a third time to see what's going on, or maybe even a fourth time. So you build the notion of what scientific inquiry is all about by doing these things.
Yeah, and the one you ignored, did you also ignore watering it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So this is something that you have been doing after a long career of scientific research and being with the Santa Fe Institute and so on. Tell us what you like about it.
I've always loved to do science teaching. And in the earlier part of my career, I was a university professor, first at Carnegie Mellon University for 14 years and then the University of Illinois for 8 years. And for most of that time, 22 years, I taught freshmen. I taught engineering physics to freshmen. And I just loved it. I never minded taking large lecture classes. I really did enjoy it. And so when I came here and the opportunity presented itself, and there's this obvious need in Santa Fe, and there's at least a potential very constructive, if not solution, at least contribution to a solution that offers itself here. And it just seemed very clear to me that this was a problem we could really try to do something about in a meaningful way.
And you're seeing the results.
We are seeing results, yes, I think that's true. We've certainly raised the profile of science and math in Santa Fe by means of the science fairs, which I mentioned we had 1,400 last year projects that we judged in 13 science fairs around the city. We've had very fine attendance at the science cafes. I think our average attendance now is 60, and that's...
Is that mostly young people?
It's mostly young people, although, as you and I have discussed, it's also true that many adults they certainly feel free to come, and they do come. And sometimes we have a significant proportion of adults. One thing we try to do, though, is to remind them that this is for students. And if they have questions, we'd like them to go see the speaker afterwards rather than taking up student time during the actual discussion. But that's a small issue.
Right.
I won't even call it a problem. And then we've had very interesting interactions out at Santa Fe Community College. That's been a fascinating exercise for us. We started in the spring of last year. A number of our tutors decided to start going over there. And here you're dealing with students who are only a year or two older than they were when we last saw them in public schools.
And you've seen some of the same ones.
I don't know if we have or not.
Yeah.
But you see a tremendously changed attitude. All of a sudden, these students have just realized life is turning on now, and I better start getting serious about some of this or I'm not going to have a career. And the tutors love that because all of a sudden the student is interested, they do their homework, they come well prepared, they have a reasonable interaction. It's a largely different experience over there. We're enjoying that a great deal.
Robert Eisenstein is a particle physicist, former president of the Santa Fe Institute, and director of the Santa Fe Alliance for Science, which can be found on the web at SFAFS, Santa Fe Alliance for Science, .org. And if people are, let's say there's a scientist or mathematician listening right now, can they join and volunteer their services?
We would love that. We're always looking for new volunteers. When I mentioned before that we've had more than 120 involved in the program, and we have about 80 active now, that sort of shows how it works. People come in, they work for a while, they go and do whatever else life has to offer them, and so we have a constant flux of people through the program. We're starting new things this year involving the Math Blitz and involving the professional enrichment effort. We need people to help staff those things. We would be delighted. And if people would like to call me directly, they can do that at 505-603-7468.
It's wonderful that so many volunteers are stepping up to do this.
Oh, absolutely. And it would be completely inappropriate for me to end this program without recording a profound debt of thanks to these individuals who contribute so much of their time to helping kids here in the community. And they do it, as volunteers. They're doing this because they love science and because they love kids. And you can't ask for more than that, I don't think.
Robert Eisenstein, thank you so much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
It's always a pleasure, Mary Charlotte. Thank you for having me.